From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Monday, April 11th, 2016. We are so honored and grateful that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. Boy, oh boy, what a weekend it was, folks. We've got a lot to get to, so much discussion in so little time. The Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings clinching the playoffs. How about that? Both Detroit professional sports teams doing that over the weekend. We will also talk about the epic collapse that was Jordan Spieth at the Masters. Improbable, you think? Unbelievable stuff. Jordan Spieth entered the back nine and just could not finish the deal, folks. We will give you a full recap of the Masters and provide some information on the new Masters champion by the name of Danny Willett. You don't want to miss that. We will also invite Bob Kendrick to the show, president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. Bob will talk about the cultural impact in sports and beyond that the great Jackie Robinson had. Again, Ken Burns, a PBS documentary entitled Jackie Robinson, will air on WKAR-TV tonight and tomorrow night, two-part series. So we will chat with Bob about Jackie. And also, we'll have weekend winners for you and so much more. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Monday, April 11th. All right, folks, at first it looked like a runaway victory for 22-year-old Jordan Spieth at the final round of the Masters yesterday. But then disaster happened on the back nine, opening the door for Danny Willett to become the second Englishman ever to win the Masters. Willett closed a bogey-free 5-under 67 round to win the championship. Last year's Masters champion, Jordan Spieth, he took a 5-shot lead. Again, a 5-shot lead into the back nine, but then collapsed with a quadruple bogey on the par 3 12th, putting actually 2 shots in the drink, allowing Willett to take advantage. Now, Willett finished the tournament at 5-under, while Spieth and Lee Westwood tied for second at 2-under. We will have more from the Masters in just a second. Don't go anywhere. Michigan State women's basketball is getting a big-time addition in Taya Reimer, a 6'4" junior forward transferring from Notre Dame and committing to the Spartans yesterday. Now, Reimer made 35 starts for the Fighting Irish, averaging better than 10 points and 6 rebounds per game. She also appeared in 2 national title games while at Notre Dame. Reimer plans to complete her degree at Indy in July, and she'll be eligible to play with the Spartans next season. How cool is that? All right, folks, the wait is over. The day is finally here. Josh Jackson, the nation's top uncommitted basketball recruit in high school, will make his college decision sometime today at his Detroit home. Now, he will be choosing between Kansas, Michigan State, and Arizona. Jackson said that he will tweet out his decision. He did not give a time, and we will, of course, provide that information if he decides to tweet any time throughout this hour. All right, the Michigan State baseball team split a doubleheader with Penn State yesterday, moving to 21-6 overall and 5-1 in the Big Ten Conference. Now, Ethan Landon picked up his third win of the year in the Spartans' 5-2 victory in Game 1, while Andrew Gonzalez, he took the loss in Game 2 with the Nittany Lions putting out 7 runs in a 7-6 dub. Now, Michigan State junior Jordan Zimmerman extended his hitting streak to 20 games. Man, is Jordan hot or what? And is hitting a stifling 437 on the year. Are you kidding me, Jay-Z? Just delivering the heat, folks. All right, the team will now play rival Michigan tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. at McLane Baseball Stadium in East Lansing. The Michigan State softball team dropped 2 of 3 to host Maryland over the weekend, falling to 20-19 overall and 2-7 in Big Ten play. Now, in the series finale yesterday, a hit batter with bases loaded in the bottom of the seventh inning allowed the Terrapins to squeak out a 9-8 win. They will also take on Michigan at home on Wednesday. First pitch will be thrown at 4:30 p.m. at Sekia Stadium. The Lansing Lugnuts were only able to get in one game this weekend on the road as they played the Great Lakes Loons on Saturday, losing 5-4. Man, this weather is something else, folks. The Luggies will host the Dayton Dragons in their home opener at Cooley Law School Stadium tonight at 7:05 p.m. The three-game series will begin with Francisco Rios on the mound for the Lugnuts. Detroit Red Wings star Pavel Datsyuk has informed the team that he intends to end his 14-year NHL playing career after this postseason and return to Russia. Undecided as to whether he will continue playing in Russia, Datsyuk said, quote, "I'm thinking I go home after this season," end quote. We'll find out if the Magic Man has any final postseason heroics in him when the Wings open the first round of the playoffs at Tampa Bay on Wednesday night. And last but not least, after their Sunday night baseball matchup with the New York Yankees was postponed, the Detroit Tigers will resume play this afternoon against the Pittsburgh Pirates at Comerica Park. JV, Justin Verlander, will take the mound for Detroit, while Jonathan Nease takes the mound for Pittsburgh. First pitch is set for 1:10 p.m., just minutes from now. We'll give you an update on that score throughout the hour as well. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Here we go.
It's just, it's tough. Yeah. It's really tough.
So when you have the perspective of some time, are you going to be pleased that you were right back in the thick of things one more time, your record here, a win and two runner-up finishes, or disappointed that you weren't able to get it across the finish line?
Pretty sure I'll be disappointed with that one. There's, we still have the confidence that we're a closing team. We can close. I have no doubt about that ability. I just think it was a very tough 30 minutes for me that hopefully I never experience again.
And I'd like to say a massive thank you to, obviously, my friends that have been out this week, all my sponsors, Callaway, AP, Saljana. It's just been a crazy ride. And again, there's two people obviously can't be here, my wife Nicole and my little man Zach. I hope they're back home watching, not gone to bed just yet. People were saying, you know, try and bring the green jacket home for little man. I think it's a little bit big, but I'm sure in a few years' time I'll grow into it. So, again, just a massive thank you to everyone here. Jordan being a fantastic, fantastic champion. I feel very fortunate, you know, to be stood here and you not putting the jacket on yourself again. So, again, fantastic week.
The game of golf, ladies and gents. She loves me, she loves me not. The epitome of that saying, watching Jordan Spieth just totally collapse at the Masters. Folks, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I'm a golf nut, and the Masters, in my opinion, is the best tournament in all of sports. There is nothing like the Masters, folks. So I stay glued to my television on Saturday from 2 to 7 and on Sunday from 2 to 7. Wasn't much to do outside, I tell you that, folks. Cold and rainy, to say the least, with a mix of snow as well. And I was just so fascinated watching how good this young kid is. Jordan Spieth, the defending Masters champion. He, of course, donned the green jacket last year and seemed well on his way to do the same this year. An interesting statistic, folks. This is how good Jordan Spieth is. And I just kept replaying into my mind when watching Jordan just display golf brilliance throughout much of the weekend and throughout, let's be real here, but throughout 90% of the Masters tournament, all right? Did you know that Jordan Spieth actually led for 7 straight rounds dating back to last year at the Masters, folks? He led Thursday through Sunday last year to win the entire enchilada, and he led Thursday, Friday, and Saturday going into the final round of Sunday this past weekend. That is absolutely remarkable. Remarkable, folks. I actually, when watching it, you know, I was sitting there on the couch with my dog and watching Jordan birdie number 6, 7, 8, and 9. I'm sitting there saying to myself, oh, this baby is kaput. It started getting boring to watch, to be honest with you. I actually fell asleep. Yeah, I fell asleep with my dog right next to me. And then what do I see? I open up my eyes about, 40 minutes later, something like that, 45 minutes later. And what do I see, folks? I couldn't believe it. I open up my eyes and I see, the first thing I see is Jordan Spieth draining his golf ball in the water for a second time. I didn't catch the first time. I was still snoozing, all right? I was still dreaming. And then when that happened, I'm saying, okay, this doesn't look good. But, I mean, Jordan Spieth, he was 7 under par going into the back 9. And then all of a sudden I hear Jim Nantz say, oh, my goodness, this doesn't look good. And all of a sudden this scorecard flashes up, and I saw that Jordan bogeyed number 10 and 11. All I see is, you know, boxes next to 10 and 11. I'm sitting there saying, no, he didn't do that. And he went on to finish up the 12th hole with, folks, a quadruple bogey. So we are talking about, in the span of 45 minutes, Jordan Spieth went from the leader to a guy swimming upstream. We saw, in the span of 45 minutes, a 6-stroke swing that opened up the door for the rest of the field. That opened up the door for your now 2016 Masters champion, Danny Willett. Talk about shocking. It was one of the most epic collapses we have ever seen in a major. A few that come to mind, going back, way back in the day, 1946, if you remember Ben Hogan, he found himself in a tie with Herman Kaiser when the later three-putted on the 18th hole. Not done yet. Hogan was unable to take advantage of his new favorable position and three-putted on the 18th himself, and Kaiser ended up winning by a stroke. Are you kidding me? Then 96, Greg Norman. Total collapse for Greg Norman. He began Sunday with a 6-shot lead over Nick Faldo, but shot 78 on the final day. Norman's day included 3 straight bogeys on numbers 9 through 11. And on number 12, his shot landed in the water, signaling the end of his run. Faldo was victorious over Norman by 5 strokes. And you look at Faldo winning the Masters in 1996. Folks, he was the first and only Englishman to win the Masters prior to what we saw on Sunday. Danny Willett, now just the second Englishman to win the Masters. And I found it kind of a bit comical that both Nick Faldo, 2 Englishmen, they won the Masters due to epic collapses in the final round Again, Greg Norman back in 96 and now Jordan Spieth here in 2016. Also with the Masters win, Danny Willett becomes the eighth player to win the Masters in two or fewer starts. Talk about a hot streak into the infancy of your major run, right? And then he also becomes just the fourth European player to win his first major at the Masters. So congratulations to Danny Willett. And it was so awkward watching Jordan Spieth during the post-game interview. You heard a snippet of it during that opening montage. Because, you know, there was an odd moment that actually Jim Nance even commented on when they both were sitting down inside, indoors, and there was like there was an interview taking place, and you had Jordan Spieth, also Danny Willett, and I forget who the third golfer was, but it was a moment everybody's talking about, and I actually put it on my Instagram page, and it's almost got, you know, almost, what, 200 views now. But Jordan Spieth was so hungover as to what just happened that he got up out of his chair with the green jacket, and of course, it's customary that last year's champion puts on the jacket of the present champion, the new champion. And, you know, Jordan got up and just, like, stumbled over the chair and was like, oh, and he kind of brushed it off and said, man, I almost tripped there, and put on the jacket for Danny Willett. But it was just an odd and awkward moment. And even during the joke, you know, you heard Danny Willett grab the mic outdoors, a great tradition as many Masters past champions, they sit down and they watch the ceremony of the new champion getting crowned and last year's champion, again, putting on the jacket for a second time on the current new champion. And Jordan Spieth, after he put on the jacket of Danny Willett outside, Danny made a comment like, you know, hey, you know, I'm just glad I was able to pull that one out and not have Jordan, put the green jacket on himself. And it was a comical moment, and everyone's laughing, and you see Jordan Spieth, he just was not laughing at all. He was just stone cold, just, man, I can't believe I just blew that. So let's get to know Danny Willett. He was born October 3rd of 1987, plays on the European Tour. He actually won the English Amateur Championship in 2007 and competed in the 2007 Walker Cup at Royal Country down in Ireland. In March of 2008, he became the number one ranked amateur in the world. Many don't know that. He also played two seasons at Jacksonville State University. And I think this is the most intriguing part of this whole discussion. You know, I certainly believe in destiny. And I think destiny revealed itself yesterday at the Masters in a matchup in which Jordan Spieth, it was his to lose, folks. And he certainly lost it. And this is a man in Danny Willett who was not even going to participate in the Masters due to his son, Zachariah James Willett, slated to be born on the day in which the final round was to take place, on April 10th, 2016. That is when his wife, Nicole, was due to birth their son. And with that in mind, Danny was going to say, you know what? My son is on his way. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I do not want to miss the birth of my son. I don't think I'm going to compete in the Masters. I think I'm going to sit this one out. But then a miracle happened, folks. His wife had Zachariah James Willett on March 30th, 12 days early, which allowed Danny to participate at the Masters. And, you know, it was cool watching Danny as he finished up his round and we were glued to the television, watching to see if Jordan Spieth could rally and maybe have a birdie round on 15th, on the 16th and what, 15th, 16th, and 17th hole, and that didn't happen at all. We saw, you know, there was a camera inside of the clubhouse that was fixed on Danny, and he had FaceTime Nicole, and you know, it was just kind of cool watching Danny just, you know, on pins and needles to see how Jordan would finish the round. And when it came to fruition that he was not going to birdie the 17th hole, you saw Danny just completely lose his mind. That was very cool stuff. Very cool stuff. He grew up in South Yorkshire, England. His father is a Church of England vicar, which is a type of priest. And his mother teaches, quote, maths, which is actually the shortened version of mathematics in England. Very cool stuff. And this is why I love golf. This is why I love watching golf and watching a major like the Masters, folks, because you know, it's, don't get me wrong, it's fun to watch Cinderellas, okay? You know, in you know, individuals that, you know, are not slated to win the entire thing. And Danny Willett, in many stretches of the imagination, he was certainly a long shot to win the Masters. But I always say this about golf. If you win a major, or if you win any tournament in the PGA Tour, folks, it's not a fluke, okay? You earned that dub, because in golf, you have to put together not just one good round, okay? You can't be a fluke. You have to put together four consistent rounds in which you are completely locked in to even have a shot at the fourth round on a Sunday, okay? You can't just waltz in there, have one good round, and win a tournament, all right? That's not how it works. That's not how it works when we go out there on the links, you know, as opposed to us, as we go out there on the links and play against your buddy in an 18-hole round and you pull away the dub. No, you have to do that three more times. So Danny Willett is a guy who's certainly been on the scene, and many people have had their eyes fixed on him. And he's an impressive young golfer. He's 28 years old. And you better believe, you know, even though I do feel for Jordan Spieth, you know, because you just feel for the guy. I mean, he had it. The Masters was his. It was his to lose, as I just stated. But Jordan Spieth is 22 years old. He's won the Masters once before, and I believe he would have become the first back-to-back champion since the likes of Tiger Woods. But Jordan is so young, the kid is so good, that you better believe that we haven't seen the last of Jordan Spieth throughout this year, folks. He is going to win a major this year. If he keeps up the way that he's playing right now and he keeps getting better, Jordan Spieth is going to have many majors to come. But man, oh man, this is going to be, you know, April 10th, 2016 is going to be a day that consistently haunts him. You better believe that. But congratulations to Danny Willett nonetheless. That was fun to watch. I thought it was going to be a snooze after watching how Jordan finished up that front nine. But man, oh man. The game of golf, it's so unpredictable. Folks, call in. I want to get your thoughts on the Masters. It was a fantastic weekend. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Doing well. Better than Jordan Spieth today, that's for sure. But, yeah, that was some epic collapse. ESPN actually titled it the biggest collapse in golf history. And I don't really think that's an unfair claim either. What separated Jordan Spieth from every other epic demise in golf history is that he was going really, really fast towards that championship. He was on fire. He was in birdie after birdie. In fact, on the front nine of the last day, he didn't even bogey a single hole. And then come the 10, he bogeys. Come the 11, he bogeys. Come the 12th, we all know about that. So it was really just quite the contest, and it was a shocking outcome. But Danny Willett, he just comes out of nowhere, seizes it, and good for him, because like you said, he's got a kid on the way. He needs some money for college, and he made $1 million, $800,000.
Yeah, and he definitely moves up in the world golf rankings as well. Very impressive outing for Danny Willett. And you talk about the game of golf, Isaac. You know, I'm an avid golfer myself, and this is the thing. When I'm out there playing, you know, I may have a good hole on the eighth or the ninth, all right? I have a good drive, a good follow-up. Heck, I may even get lucky and par the dang hole, all right? That's very rare for me. But when I do have a hole like that, you know what happens? Your confidence goes up. And this is what exactly happened to Jordan Spieth. And he admitted it. He admitted it. On the 12th hole, you, in many ways, you have to play that safe, because you got that water right before that edge. And you ideally, the ideal way to play that hole is to lay up and then take your time on that second shot and choose the right club. He wanted to go for the flag, and he admitted that was a big mistake. He was feeling it. I mean, he had four straight birdies. He's feeling good. He was seven under. Hey, I had a five-stroke lead going into the back nine. So he's confident. He's riding high. But the game of golf has a funny way of humbling you. As soon as you start getting a little too cocky and confident, it will bring you back down to earth. And it did that with Jordan. That's exactly what happened. And you know, if he plays it safe, if he just treads water those last nine holes, we are singing an entirely different tune on this Monday afternoon. But that didn't happen, and you saw, you know, a golfer like, you know, Danny Willett, who had a great round yesterday. He didn't have one bogey. He had five birdies. That's what you have to do if you want to have a shot at the end of the day. So congratulations to him. He certainly earned it. But Jordan Spieth gave it to him. He certainly handed it to him as well.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And you mentioned just the momentum game, the mental aspect of really any sport, but especially golf. When you're riding high, you want to keep going. But when you play it safe, there's a reason that caution takes priority in sports. There's a reason why coaches, when you're up 15 in basketball with 2 minutes remaining, they tell you to slow it down. Now, you might be able to keep going and score another 15, have this huge win, but is it worth the risk? And obviously, that's similar to what Jordan Spieth did. He tried to take a risk, tried to extend that lead even further, put up one of the best performances we've seen in recent Masters history, but it ended up costing him the green jacket and giving him quite a few bad memories for the future.
Yeah, he's going to sulk about this one for years. But, again, Jordan Spieth, man, the kid is so fun to watch, though. When I watched him on that front nine and he birdied the final four holes of the front nine, I'm sitting there saying to myself, this kid is just locked in. His putting game is so good. I think Jordan Spieth's putting is the best in golf right now. There is no one better when it comes to just reading the greens. That was absolutely fantastic. His driving was so-so. He could have been more accurate, I thought, off the tee. But his short game was what was really masterful. So, congratulations to Danny Willett. Also, a few notable golfers I want to bring up. Jason Day, statistically the number one golfer in the world. He had a pretty solid outing. Jason Day, you know, after those first two rounds, I'm sitting there saying to myself, no, there's no way that Jason can rally. But he traded water, and he was at even par actually approaching the weekend. And he had some opportunities to make some noise. Just the thing about Jason Day was, I mean, you talk about his short game, you know, coming back to bite him. That's exactly what happened with Jason Day. He could have been better when it came to, you know, just his short game overall. And then Rory McIlroy. It was so fun to watch Saturday because it's so rare. And it was actually the first time in Masters history that we saw a weekend pairing that featured two guys that had won Masters championships. And it was so fun to watch. I mean, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, the gallery following them throughout both of their rounds. Just unbelievable stuff. Jordan Spieth was excellent, but Rory McIlroy was just not accurate off the tee. He lived in the pine, folks. Yeah, in the pine straw. And he even had one hit to kind of, you know, capitalize his entire weekend. One hit in the pine where he tried to get it out of there, and he tries to just hit it back onto the green to play for his third shot, and it curves, it hits a wrong hill, and goes right into the water. So Rory was understandably disappointed with his outing. But again, the Masters signifies the start of the major championship series that is the PGA. So there will be plenty of opportunities for both Rory, Jason Day, and Spieth to rebound. All right, I want to talk about also more news that took place locally here when it comes to two professional teams. The Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings are in the postseason. How about that? They are in the playoffs. The Pistons, for the first time since 2009. How about that? You guys know I am a huge Detroit Pistons fan. I have been waiting for this moment since my freshman year of college. That's a long time. My goodness. And also, the Detroit Red Wings, they do what they do. The playoffs is what they do. They have not missed a postseason since 1991. That's 25 straight years, folks. That is the longest postseason streak in all of North American sports. So congratulations to both the Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings. And the Pistons right now, you know, Stan Van wants to gun for a higher seed right now. The Pistons currently sit at number 7. If the playoffs were to start today, they will be playing the Toronto Raptors. They host the Miami Heat on Tuesday and close the season at Cleveland against LeBron James and company on Wednesday. Now, the implications for both of those games, when you evaluate the Miami Heat, they are fighting for that third or fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. And Cleveland lost out on an opportunity to clinch the number one seed with a loss to Chicago on Saturday. So, you know, when you look at both of those matchups, for me, Isaac, if I had my picking, I would want to see the Pistons play the Miami Heat. And well, excuse me, not the Miami Heat, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I don't want to see them play the Miami Heat.
No, I don't want to see them play the Miami Heat. The Cleveland Cavaliers, excuse me. I'm still thinking about LeBron wearing a Miami Heat jersey.
Oh, of course.
But I want to see him play LeBron James, excuse me. Now, the reason why is because, first off, the national attention that the Pistons would get would be off the charts. For one, I would love to see the Pistons, see how they handle pressure on a national stage going against arguably the best basketball player on the planet. And also because of this, no one's expecting the Pistons to beat either the Raptors or the Cavaliers coming out of the first round. So why not play the best out of those two and use that as a litmus test to exactly see how far the Detroit Pistons are from being a legitimate championship contender? Simple as that. If you play the Cleveland Cavaliers, you will directly be able to see where the holes in your boat are and how to plug those holes moving forward. And again, on a national stage, to see how they deal with that national attention, to see how they deal with that quote-unquote pressure. I don't even know if you can say as much pressure when you're slated to lose and ideally get swept at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's going to be a fun series. So I would love to see the Pistons on a national stage, and how great would that be for the fans here that have been waiting for the Pistons to be in the playoffs? Again, since 2009, to go against LeBron James in the first round, oh, that'd be such a fun matchup. Now, the Pistons are 2-1 against Cleveland, 1-2 against Toronto. And I can argue this. I think that the Pistons getting that victory on February 22nd against LeBron James and company, that to me was the turning point in the Detroit Pistons season as far as playoff implications are concerned. If you go back to February 22nd at Cleveland, if you remember, the Pistons were two games under 500 in that matchup. And it was also that trade just happened in which the Pistons acquired Tobias Harris. It was Tobias Harris's first start in his third game since that trade happened when the Pistons acquired Harris. And then that sparked a run in which the Pistons went 16-8. So again, they've had success against Cleveland more so than they've had against Toronto. But again, take that with a grain of salt because it is the regular season. The playoffs are a totally different season. And Reggie Jackson, a man who has playoff experience, he has been preaching that to his teammates, and I'm sure Stan Van is preaching the same. But at the same time, you know, it will be a fun matchup to see the Pistons go against Cleveland.
No, I agree. I think the Cavaliers are the only bona fide title contender in the East. Now, of course, you've got multiple teams that could actually make that. Before talking about beating the Warriors, beating the Spurs, Cleveland's the only team that can do it. So I'm with you. You want to face the best. You want to see how far off the mark you are. So I agree 100% from that standpoint. I also think that if you had to pick an upset to happen in the first round, it wouldn't be against the Raptors. They're more consistent than the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers, they've got the highest potential, the highest ceiling of anybody in the East.
Yeah.
But exactly, they've got problems. They're disjointed as a team. Kevin Love, still don't know how he fits in there. I'm not convinced by Kyrie Irving handling the ball more than LeBron James. So the Detroit Pistons, if they were to beat one of those two teams, I think it would be the Cavaliers too, or at least make it a 6 or 7 game series. So I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are who the Pistons should want to face. They are the number one seed right now, but you've got to remember both of those teams, the Pistons and the Cavs, have a little bit of mobility in the standings in that the Cavs could move down to 2 and the Pistons up to 7, or one of the two could happen. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But this is just a huge step in the right direction for the Detroit Pistons.
It is.
Making this playoffs, especially with the young core and the young talent that they have and the vision of Stan Van Gundy going forward.
Yeah, with the Pistons clinching the playoffs, I mean, if the season was to end after a first-round matchup between Cleveland or Toronto, this season is already a success. They are taking a step in the right direction. But I also agree, Isaac, that the Cleveland Cavaliers right now are disjointed. I don't think that LeBron James is happy in Cleveland right now. I've got to say that. Just his demeanor, you know, listening to how he talks about his team in the post-game press conference, LeBron wishes he was back in Miami with his good friend Dwayne Wade, with Chris Bosh. He is reminiscing on those times, without a doubt. But at the same time, this is a Cleveland Cavaliers team that is highly favored in the Eastern Conference. That's favored to go to the NBA Finals once again and have a rematch against Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. And the Pistons aren't your average. They aren't going to be your average 7 or 8 seed here, folks. With 43 wins and a chance to get to 45 if they win these next two games to close out the year, they are already ahead of the average wins total for the East, number 7 seed, for the last 10 seasons. Can you believe that? The Eastern Conference certainly made a huge jump in comparison to the last few years, Isaac. When you look at the average total wins for the number 7 seed in the Eastern Conference of the NBA, in the last 10 years, Isaac, it's been 41. The Pistons already have 43 wins. And for the 8th seed, it's even worse, of course, at 39. That's horrible, first off, when you talk about the NBA's Eastern Conference. Step your game up, East. That's horrible. But the Pistons have already made strides. And to even compete on that level and to etch a spot and to clinch a spot is very, very impressive. We'll get to the Detroit Red Wings in just a bit. Again, the Wings, they will take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I'm going to give you guys a bit of a preview of that one when we return from our second break. But listen to our first break. And when we come back, we'll be chatting with the president of the Negro League Baseball Museum out in Kansas City, Missouri, Bob Kendrick. He'll talk about Jackie Robinson and what Jackie has meant to the world of sports and culturally, that and more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. African Americans began to play baseball in the late 1800s on military teams, college teams, and company teams. Now, they eventually found their way to professional teams with white players. Moses Fleetwood Walker and Bud Fowler were among the first to participate. However, racism and Jim Crow laws would force them from these teams by 1900. Thus, Black players form their own units, barnstorming around the country to play anyone who would challenge them. Now, in 1920, an organized league structure was formed under the guidance of Andrew Rube Foster, a former player, manager, and owner for the Chicago American Giants. The National Negro League was then founded. Now, in 1945, Major League Baseball's Brooklyn Dodgers recruited a man by the name of Jackie Robinson from the Kansas City Monarchs. Now, Robinson now becomes the first African-American in the modern era to play on a major league roster. The newest Ken Burns PBS documentary is entitled simply Jackie Robinson. It's an in-depth look at the life and times of the Brooklyn Dodgers star who was central to the integration of Major League Baseball in 1947. The program airs tonight and tomorrow night in a two-part series at 9 p.m. on WKAR-TV. We invited Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri, this morning to actually talk about Jackie's impact to the game of baseball and to our society.
Not a problem, man. Happy to do it. I'm glad we can make it work.
Certainly. All right. Well, we're going to dive right into this because we're like, I want to say like, 12 minutes away from showtime. So I'm just going to just go right into the interview. I'm going to do a live intro before I throw to this piece of tape. So first off, Bob, first question, very simple. What does Jackie Robinson mean to you?
Oh, man. As I've learned more about Robinson and my role here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, it reinforces what I think we already knew, is that he is one of the most significant people in American history. Some will argue that he was this nation's greatest hero, and that is certainly a position we take here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, because you have to remember how big baseball was in our society, and still is. You know, the reverence that they held for baseball back then, though. And so his breaking of the color barrier changed things not only in our sport, but for our country, particularly as it relates to social advancement in our country. He, by all definitions, he was an American hero. There is no question about that. And I think having worked in this environment, having had a great insight to Jackie, even prior to this documentary, so, you know, I already had that kind of reverence for him. The documentary just enhanced what I already knew.
Certainly. And Bob, when people come to visit the Negro League Baseball Museum down near Missouri, I got to ask, is Jackie the biggest draw that people want to know about when they enter your doors?
You know, actually, he's not, because with the way we treat Jackie, Jackie is the beginning as it relates to Major League Baseball,
mm-hmm.
but he's also the end for the Negro Leagues. And so it's really interesting because there's no question that his breaking of the color barrier led to the ultimate demise of the Negro Leagues. So it was good socially, it was good morally, but it was devastating economically in the African-American community in a lot of ways. So Jackie is really at the end of the exhibition. His story is at the end of the exhibition, but what he does do is now he's opened that door for those who had kind of played in the Negro Leagues to move into Major League Baseball. But, you know, the people that folks really come to see and want to hear about as it relates to the Negro Leagues, and I think because the lore and legend are so great around these guys.
Right, right.
Hey,
yeah, certainly.
Bell, Josh Gibson. Those are the names, believe it or not, that still resonate with folks. There are so many people that did not know Robinson played in the Negro Leagues. That, you know, so this is almost new to them. Even people in Kansas City don't know that Robinson played. His professional roots began in the Negro Leagues with the great Kansas City Monarchs. So, yeah, they're actually coming to hear about those legendary Negro Leaguers they had heard about. Then they discover that Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Ernie Banks, Roy Campanella, household names in the major leagues, all these guys come out the Negro Leagues. But it was Jackie that opened that door for those guys to have that opportunity to play in the major leagues.
Now, Bob, you just mentioned how Jackie has his professional roots right out there in Missouri. Of course, the Brooklyn Dodgers recruited Jackie from the Kansas City Monarchs. I'm curious to know, what sort of memorabilia do you guys don from Jackie's career at the museum?
We have a few pieces, you know, relative to mostly photographs. You know, I just saw that contract, his Brooklyn Dodgers contract, you know, now valued at $36 million, man.
Oh, wow.
You know, we wish it was here in Kansas City where it rightfully should be, but at $36 million, no, it won't make it here unless somebody who has...
right, unless somebody got some moolah,
somebody
right?
who has the desires for it to be here. But if there's anybody listening who would like to see that Brooklyn Dodger contract of Jackie Robinson come to Kansas City, we would certainly welcome it. But, you know, we've been very, very fortunate to have a few pieces of Jackie's, a bat of his, and some other memorabilia that kind of help people understand that his roots began here. We certainly look at that portion of the exhibit, which we call Changing Times, because World War II was that impetus. And so all of that is kind of woven into his story as he transitions from the Negro Leagues. He only played here for 1 year, but he learned a lot. The style that he took with him to the major leagues is a style that he learned in the Negro Leagues. And the guys really did welcome him on his team. They didn't think too much of Jackie, you know, when he joined the Monarchs relative to the fact that he was just another guy trying to make the ball club. Now, again, J.O. Wilkinson would sign Jackie Robinson. He had no idea how that he was signing the man that would put him out of business.
That's so true. Bob Kendrick, of course, he is the president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. Bob, before we get you out of here, can you sort of put in perspective the kind of trials and tribulations that Jackie went through during his time and trying to break that color barrier in the majors?
Oh, man, it was tough. You got to think about it from the standpoint that nobody wanted you to be there. You know, his own teammates didn't want him to be there. The opposition didn't want him to be there. Fans came to the games expressly to boo him. And then here we're talking about a very fiery, feisty guy. As the late, great Buck O'Neill would say, Jackie Robinson could duke and would duke. He'd knock you on your rump. Who had to humble himself to take this stuff, to turn the other cheek, when that was totally out of character for him. And so this was very difficult for him. So the only way that he could fight back was by performing on the field. Because if he fought back any other way, this experiment is going to be over. And as I tell our young people when they come to the Negro Leagues Museum, sometimes you have to be stronger not to fight back. And that was certainly the case with Jackie. Because you keep in mind, he couldn't stay in the same hotels. He couldn't eat in the same restaurants. He was basically shouldering the weight of 21 million black folks on his back when he walked across those lines. So had he failed, an entire race of people would have failed. That's an enormous amount of pressure for any one individual to have to bear in a sport that is difficult enough to play under the best of circumstances. You know, this is a tough sport to play.
You ain't lying, right.
You're shouldering all of that, and somehow or another, he's able to go out and perform at an incredibly high level with the weight of an entire race of people on his back. And he did it with such grace, class, and dignity. We should never forget Jackie Robinson, nor should we ever forget the league that gave us Jackie Robinson. Because had it not been for the Negro Leagues, we don't get Jackie Robinson. And we don't know how long it would have been before a black man would have gotten that opportunity to play in the major leagues. You know, so the possibility of having missed Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, Roy Campanella, Roberto Clemente, can you imagine our sport without those stars? And if you can, you can imagine what our sport looked like before 1947. Because these men that just learned to play after 1947, they were playing great baseball well before then. And so Jackie creates that opportunity for us to see these other legendary guys, those young stars who left the Negro Leagues and became stars at the major league level and who made an indelible imprint on the game. So it gives you that belief that had Cool Papa Bell or Josh Gibson or Boo June Wilson or Hilton Smith or Oscar Charleston had the opportunity to play in the major leagues, the record books would absolutely be entirely different.
So true. All right, Bob, one last question for you. What do you think the legacy of Jackie is?
I think the legacy of Jackie is very simple. What Jackie Robinson demonstrated so beautifully to all of us is that one man or one person can make a difference. You know, we hear it all the time, man. You know, well, I'm just one person. I can't make a difference. Yes, you can. And Jackie Robinson demonstrated that, I think, very courageously and very heroically, that one person can indeed make a difference. And his legacy still plays on. And I think that's the thing to me that he brings to the forefront. And hopefully this documentary will bring to the forefront is how he made a difference.
So true. Bob Kendrick, thank you so much for your time, Bob. We will surely get back in touch with you for a longer segment, but we appreciate your time, all right?
Anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. All right, got to remind you all that, again, the newest Ken Burns PBS documentary is entitled simply Jackie Robinson. It's an in-depth look at the life and times of the Brooklyn Dodgers star who was central to the integration of Major League Baseball in 1947. The program airs tonight and tomorrow night, a two-part series, 9 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Also want to pass this news along to you all. Now, I had previously stated in our Quick Hit Headliners that Josh Jackson, he will be announcing where he will be taking his basketball talents collegiately today. But we didn't know what time. But now we do. His girlfriend, Kersey Gondrzik, has announced that Josh will be announcing at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. That's 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So get your popcorn ready. That's when the announcement will be made. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will chat about the Detroit Red Wings in a bid for the playoffs for the 25th consecutive year. Also, we'll bring you weekend winners and more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Thank you.
You know, it really blows my mind when I think about this incredible postseason streak that the Red Wings are on, and it looked bleak for a moment when discussing the Detroit Red Wings making the postseason a few weeks ago. I mean, we were on the edge of our seats to see if this streak would come to an end. And if you're 26 or younger, yeah, you've seen the Stanley Cup playoffs without, you've never seen, I should say, the Stanley Cup playoffs without the Detroit Red Wings. Again, they qualify for the postseason for the 25th consecutive season. The last time the Detroit Red Wings didn't make the playoffs, the math actually takes you back to April 1st of 1990. I was born October 7th of 1990, and I know Isaac is younger than myself. He surely was not born without, you know, seeing the Detroit Red Wings not make the playoffs. It's really unbelievable. When you look at, you know, where the world was 26 years ago, get this, a few interesting tidbits here. George H.W. Bush was the president of the United States. The population of the U.S. was 249 million. The internet was 5 months away from becoming really officially a thing. A smartphone was something that operated from a plug and a long cord in your house and had an answering machine that recorded messages on a tiny audio tape. Yeah, that takes you back, right? A tweet was the exclusive message of a bird. General Motors topped the Fortune 500 as the most valuable company. And get this, as far as music goes, Escapade by Janet Jackson, Black Velvet by Elena Miles, and Vogue by Madonna were burning up the airwaves. How about that? And the popular movies of that month were Pretty Woman with Richard Gere as John and Julia Roberts as a... I think she played a prostitute in that movie, didn't she?
I could you've not
seen,
tell you.
Kid, you've never seen Pretty Woman, Isaac. That's no. Crazy. That's a classic, man. Also, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out. Goodfellas came out. Home Alone, Total Recall, Ghost. Also, Rocky V. How about that? So, yeah, that takes you back to 1991 in April. That's when the Wings officially started the 25-year playoff streak. And also, Jack Nicklaus played in his first senior tour event, which, of course, the great one, he promptly won. So, unbelievable stuff. Now, the Wings will go on to play the Lightning here, Isaac. And the Lightning actually defeated the Red Wings in a 7-game series, if you remember, last spring. And that thing went all the way to a Game 7, a 2-0 victory for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, you know, the Wings actually led that series 3-2, and all signs pointed to the Detroit Red Wings upset over the Tampa Bay Lightning. But that didn't happen. The Lightning actually went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, falling to the Chicago Blackhawks. Tampa will be without forward Steven Stamkos, who, again, is suffering from a blood clot and an arm injury. And defenseman Anton Strahlman is also out. Two big components to what the Lightning do. And the two actually split a 4-game series this year, each winning twice on their home ice. And John Cooper and Jeff Blashill, they go all the way back as well. They've known each other since coaching junior hockey. Blashill was coaching at Western Michigan and recruiting actually some of Cooper's young players. So the odds will be certainly stacked against this Detroit Red Wings team. But I do believe that they can get out the first round. I mean, that's the thing about hockey, man. Hockey is one of those things that's really momentum-driven. If you can, you know, ride some momentum going into the playoffs, now the Detroit Red Wings won't be doing that because they had two bad outings this past weekend. But at the same time, they certainly have the talent to make a run here and possibly get the upset. And also, Stamkos and Strawman being out for the Lightning, those are going to be two key misses for what Tampa Bay loves to do.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, hockey's the only series or playoff, I guess, that I can remember an 8 seed ever winning. The LA Kings a few years back, of course, came all that way. I think won the first round in 6 or 7 games. So it's not out of the question. It's unlikely, of course, you favor Tampa Bay. But at the same time, you mentioned the injury problems. And that's such a big deal. And I think if the Red Wings are able to go out and really, I mean, it sounds cliche, but skate their heart out. Basically just go out there, give all the energy they can, because this is a depleted Lightning team. So if they can wear them out, make a lot of line switches and everything like that, I think the Red Wings have a chance to at least take a few games.
I agree. All right, well, 5 minutes left in the show here, Isaac. We love to close out each and every Monday's edition of Current Sports with a segment entitled Weekend Winners, where we look at the weekend that was and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in the sporting world and beyond. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, weekend winners. Well, I got to go with Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao may retire after this. Who knows? But in Manny Pacquiao versus Timothy Bradley 3, Pacquiao was able to pretty handedly beat Timothy Bradley. Now, you know, the intrigue surrounding around this one is that, you know, when you look at the first two fights between Manny and Bradley, Manny dominated both fights, folks. Dominated both fights, but again, in one of the most controversial decisions in boxing history, you know, when it comes to how it looks on paper, Bradley actually won one of those bouts in a very controversial way. Again, Manny dominated the first two fights, folks. So this was the rubber match, and Manny didn't even give Bradley a chance. So congratulations to Manny Pacquiao. He's debating on retiring now. He doesn't know what he's going to do. Also, Danny Willett, again, master champion, only the second Englishman to win the Masters. How about that? Only himself and Nick Faldo have accomplished that. And how about the Golden State Warriors? Yeah, they have an opportunity now to break the 1995-96 Chicago Bulls 72-10 record if they can win. I believe, who do they play on Wednesday? I think it's the Grizzlies? They play the Grizzlies once more on Wednesday. And also, I found this intriguing. I put this on my social media page. This is from Michael Jordan to Draymond Green. Quote, "Go get the record. If y'all don't win this record, I'ma be hot, and I'm blaming you." That was Michael Jordan's message to Draymond Green when it comes to the Bulls' coveted record of the 90s. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, and how about the Warriors not only escaping the Spurs, but the Grizzlies also this weekend, down 9 in the fourth quarter, coming back to win that on a Lance Stephenson missed last-second shot. My weekend winner, though, is Leicester City. And you've never heard of them, I'm sure, but they're a Premier League team who was predicted to finish in the bottom three of the league this year. Now they're 7 points clear at the top, looking to win the whole shebang with just 5 games remaining. It's one of the biggest Cinderella stories of all time, not just in sports. And then last but not least,
Isaac loves his soccer, folks.
Oh, yes. And you'll hear more about that as the season goes on. Last but not least, Trevor Story of the Rockies, 7 home runs. What?
Yeah, and no rookie has ever hit 4 home runs in his first 4 games. In the major leagues. That's unbelievable. I mean, I saw that story. I had to do a double take. So congratulations to Mr. Story. He is fun to watch, folks. All right, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We will invite Xavier DeGroat for tomorrow's show. He has written a book on the greatest Muhammad Ali. Have a fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.